The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox have had their end of the season press conference with the beat writers. Alex Cora, Craig Breslow, Sam Kennedy all took questions, some tough questions. Not sure the answers are as satisfying as we might hope, but we will be getting into all of that, as well as our end-of-the-year observations. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Steve McGreevy. How are you, gentlemen?
Glad it's over.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, at least I can go back to that cozy, beat-up couch for October. It's a comfort zone at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just from a, you know, behind the scenes insight that I can give the audience, you're doing the last 3 weeks of the season knowing what the end result's going to be, and you have to make a show out of whatever that series was. And I think we did a hell of a job, because I went into it thinking various, you know, series, thinking, man, how are we going to make this compelling and entertaining? And I thought we still continued to have good dialogue throughout. But like Jeremy said, I'm still glad to be done with it. We've got some postseason baseball. Had some interesting games today. We'll be getting into those on Thursday night with reaction, but certainly some upsets compared to how we picked them. But back to the Red Sox. So The general gist of the press conference was they were kind of taking accountability, but doing it with mixed signals and not giving a lot of certainty for what the next steps would be. And right away, Breslow says, "We didn't reach our goal. Our fans, like us, accept to compete for championships. And we fell short." Now, I think I can kind of speak for you guys. We didn't expect to be competing for a championship on opening day, knowing that this was the roster. So apparently only they expected to compete for championships. Vegas certainly didn't agree with them. I think the over-under was 80.5, which they did exceed finally on game 162. But That's how they opened, and what are your thoughts just on that? Jeremy, go ahead.
They're not saying anything. It's the biggest nothings of all time. Like, we expect to compete for a championship. At best, that's a lie. I think it's purposely misleading. And then, we didn't reach our goal. No, duh. And then it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't address anything. It doesn't address the failures in the offseason. Then they exceed expectations, and you just do a nothing burger at the deadline. There's no accountability. And it's just a vanilla statement. You know, like, Breslow's probably going in saying, this isn't going to get me in any trouble.
Steve, thoughts?
I mean, I think they're playing this the other way. Like, everyone's saying that the Red Sox did better than what was expected this year. When, I mean, as far as I remember, going into spring training, everyone was like, man, if these dudes break 500, we'll say that's like okay. And not okay as in that's acceptable by our standards, but that's what's expected from what's laid out in front of us. And lo and behold, that's what we got. Now, I think that the front office, and I think some of the folks moving around in there after Breslow came in and stuff like that, thought that they might be able to get something else out of this, that there might be something more than that, and they could surprise folks. They could have that comeback, I don't know, not even comeback, but just dream series, and then, you know, they're having the documentary filmed at the same time. So think if they could pull this out while everyone's being haters and, like, criticizing them on the construction of the team and stuff like that, and legitimately, there was like 6 or 7 blown games that would have made a difference whether they got in or not. And then when, whether they got in or not, then it would have all fell on Cora's shoulders. Ultimately, though, disappointment, massive disappointment, massive lip service is what I'd say overall from this thing. Yeah, enough said there.
Steve, with regards to the first part of what you said, that might be the fans' expectation. That was not the organization's expectation. And if you think Breslow actually thought they had a chance to be competitive, you're out of your goddamn mind. That he knew Breslow was hired to not spend money and to continue to promote the big three, now big four. But if Breslow actually thought with this roster they had a chance to compete, then you're drinking the Kool-Aid, because there's no way that he is capable, because he's not, that he's capable of being a piece of this organization that moves it forward, that he's assessed the roster going into 2024 that they were going to be competitive. That it's not possible. I'll never believe that. So I'm not like trying to pick a fight, because that's not what I'm just saying. I disagree completely.
No. It's fine, and we're picking parts on points.
Yeah,
I never thought that Breslow could do it either. But look, what was Breslow's background? He can't, like, what was his managerial, his front office? Pitching. He developed pitching, right? So what did he toot his horn to during this interview about how he developed the pitching and help on him, blah, blah, blah? Yes, I think he was delusional enough thinking that he could come in and throw an O'Neill and throw a couple random haggard pitching additions to it, and that his brilliance would carry it through. And that I genuinely thought he saw us playing October baseball. Not trying to, like, defend the guy or saying that I thought the same or whatever, but apparently that's what he thought.
God, I hope not.
So, a couple other things. Kennedy, for one thing, I watched, I think, about 35 minutes of the press conference, nearly all of it, before we started to come on. Sam Kennedy was doing a lot of the talking, you know, where I thought Breslow, like, your front office, your chief baseball officer should be fielding most of the baseball questions. And Breslow did answer a number of them, but I thought Kennedy's mouth should have been shut on a lot of it. But one of the things...
Well, he's the best liar of the group.
And his mouth was only open to receive fecal matter. That was it. Look at everything that he spouted out. It was basically him admitting. It was just being like, oh, we said that. Oh, yeah, I said that, and we didn't do this. I mean, what was the quote? Let me find it. They were talking about the full throttle thing. And he was like, I learned a hard lesson that actions are louder than words. And then just deadpan the camera. Like, he was there to eat crap for Breslow. That was his only reason that he was at that conference.
The way the beat writer, and I didn't recognize whose voice it was. I know who Cotillo is. I know who McAdam is. I know who Pete Abe is. So if they're the ones asking, I know exactly who it's coming from. But
oh, they definitely had the B squad on tonight. Or, you know,
well, they were there though, but this particular writer, I couldn't recognize his voice. He said, and this was to Kennedy, he said, last year, you, meaning ownership, said there would be a full throttle approach. And Kennedy had basically been saying, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to try to get better. And the beat writer goes, so why should we believe you now? And Kennedy gave the same political, you know, answer in trying to be safe. Another great question, and this one was kicked around on social media by a lot of accounts because it was a great question by Chris Cotillo. He asked, have the goalposts moved on what's now a successful season? Meaning, is being 500, is that a successful season now? And I think part of why he's probably asking that is the gate numbers weren't bad, you know, as far as attendance and all that. I know it wasn't, you know, they weren't selling out regularly, but that was a great question. And Kennedy didn't even want to really elaborate on much. He just denied it, says, no, that's not, we haven't moved the goalposts, and very quickly got off of that question.
Kennedy lied.
He did in another response though say that, you know, an 84 and 86 team is not going to cut it.
Right, he did say
that. And that they have to be aggressive and push towards that 90. So that contradicts a little bit of the narrative there. But we know what they're really... I mean, we're getting lip service. Come on.
They wouldn't commit to where the payroll would be. And Jeremy, you pointed out privately, maybe they don't have those directives yet. They won't comment... I was going to say, the only other thing I was going to add is they wouldn't elaborate on whether ticket prices would increase or decrease, because they haven't.
Oh, man, they did. They elaborated very much on that, that it's dynamic pricing. And then from last year to this year, it was barely like a 2% increase or whatever. But
yeah,
coming from someone who flirts with like season tickets, that's all that conversation was about.
Well,
that question and that conversation about that stuff was about season ticket stuff, because that's where their whales are. And if they're doing dynamic pricing to where it moves more than 1% or 2%, then the folks that buy the 20-game, 30-game, 40-game packages at the beginning of the year, when at the end of the season they're getting $9 tickets for their $200 lodge seats, they're not happy with that. That ruins business. That's my – okay. And that brings me to one of my biggest points about this whole thing. They kept talking about, like, we're very much invested in the baseball – organization of this and the chief baseball, and it's like they were treating this like the meat department at Market Basket. This should be your primary concern, and they're treating it like an arm of a giant entity, and the disconnect there is what's killing it, and it's what's rolling right into exactly what you were just on.
Yeah, but he did say, though, that when he wouldn't commit to whether they would go up or down, he said they had to look at the data, assess the averages, and all of that. So I'm just saying what he said. So they just don't know what the numbers are. They don't know what money they've got to play with. And their payroll's at $154 million. It hasn't been that low for as long as I can remember, maybe 10 or more years. It hasn't been that low going into a winter. So they have roughly, about $85, $90 million to spend before they even get to the luxury tax. That should be plenty of money. A smart executive should be able to take that money, address the exact needs, and put a 90-win team on the field. That's my expectations for now. Get us to 90 wins. Once we start getting there regularly, maybe we can look at 95 to 100. And at that point, you're hoping for a World Series. If you're capable of winning that many games, the bar should be a World Series. They're just not committing to exactly how aggressive they're going to be. They're just sticking to simple rhetoric, to praying that it's going to satisfy the fan base. Jeremy.
I don't think, and I'm going to actually give the organization a break here. I don't think they're in a position to know what that is yet. And keeping in mind that the guy that ultimately makes the decision is probably on his yacht in the Baltic waiting for Manchester United to have their next soccer match. So, I mean, that part of it I can find reasonable, but what I can't find reasonable is them not telling us that. Like, Sam Kennedy's such a liar. He doesn't know how to not lie. Is it, would anybody in this room be upset if they said, listen, I understand your concern, the fan base, the media, about how we're going to spend, whether we're willing to go over the luxury, you know, tax threshold. But it's too early. We just played a game 2 days ago. Give us some time. Let us get towards the winter meetings. Let us assess the free agent market, you know, who's going to be available. And then we will be candid with you at that time. But right now it's too early. But they didn't choose to do that. How easy would that have been? Truth. You know, number one, truth. It's reasonable. And they buy themselves some time. I mean, they're so used to lying to us that they don't know how not to, even when it's the easier out. How reasonable would that be? It's utterly ridiculous. There's no way John Henry has got a proposal from Breslow through the liar Kennedy up to Henry's desk, wherever the hell that is, and them to have a, you know, meetings and everything else, talk to the nerds, and then come back with an answer. There's no way that has happened yet. And how would it? I mean, there's still baseball being played, but they can't do that. They have to lie because they assume you're all idiots. Or at least
I don't think it's so much as lying, so much as like they are really convinced. It's like they are sitting at a poker table with 29 other players, and they're worried that, like, it's like the, you know, I don't know, what was it, back in like 06 or something, when the World Poker Tour thing was like all famous and there was cameras everywhere and you had famous dudes like that. That's where they feel that they're at right now. So any movement that they do, they scratch their nose, they you know, they shuffle their chips a little bit, that they're spilling their hand for whatever reason. It's asinine. I know it's asinine. You're shaking your head, Shilly. I know it's crazy, but that's where they're at. That's where they're at with this. And you can't really discount it because, I mean, for the most part, what was baseball? Outside of like the actual fundamental athletics of it, baseball is a sport of deception. I'm going to tell you I'm throwing a fastball. I'm going to try to convince you I'm throwing the curveball. Exactly. And now it's bleeding elsewhere.
Steven, I know how you're wrong. Last year they said that they were going full. Well, I suggest you're wrong. You may be right. But it's not a competitive disadvantage to say we expect to be aggressive. They did it last offseason and then weren't. Who did they trick, Steve? Themselves? Do you think the Yankees went and got Soto? Oh, my God, the Red Sox are going to spend because that liar Kennedy said we're going to go full throttle. And then
I didn't really think they're the stepdad that shows up at Christmas and is like, oh, no, actually, he shows up like a month before Christmas and he's like, dude, I'm totally bringing you the PlayStation. I'm doing all this cool stuff. And then he shows up 2 weeks after Christmas with, like, I don't know, Atari from the, you know, Goodwill or something. You know what I'm going for here. Like, lots of promises left undelivered, but I think they actually believe these lies. That's what I was getting to before. They believe these lies.
This is about whether them giving the media some information is a competitive disadvantage. It's not. What would be a competitive disadvantage is making their offer to who was the Dodger international pitcher?
Yamamoto.
So Yamamoto. It'd be a competitive disadvantage in the middle of negotiations to come out and say, this is our offer to Yamamoto. All right, now probably their camp's providing it anyways, but that's a competitive disadvantage. Another competitive disadvantage would be out to go out and say, we're not involved in Yamamoto, right? But that's not what we're talking about. You're just explaining to the fan base what they can expect from the organization in support of the big league club. That is not a competitive disadvantage. And if you believe that, then you are falling into the trap that is their nonsense. You can't tell me that a generalized state, and I'm not talking about you, Steve, I'm talking about the organization. You can't shovel that and have me believe it. You can't. That's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
No. I never said so I believe it. They're the only ones that believe it. Everyone else thinks it's a joke. The other owners, the folks that they're getting these trades, they think it's a joke how they're acting. The fans think it's a joke. The media think it's a joke. It's only them that thinks it's okay.
So here's what I think is going on. In part, they're putting this rhetoric out there. But on another hand, they think they're going to solve this and that they're going to work it out somehow. They think they're going to end up with this product that's going to be viable. But they're just not smart enough to do it. They don't know how to execute it. they have no idea right now how they're going to execute all these plans. Breslow talked about, yeah, we need a top of the rotation guy. Our lack of depth hurt us in the second half, so we have to go get that top of the rotation guy. But they don't. They know they need it, but how are they going to do it? Is a totally different thing here. And the other thing we need to think about here is if the Blue Jays decide they're not going to trade Guerrero and Bichette, and I have no idea which way they're going to go on that, but if they decide to keep those two players, they're going to try to put a winner on the field. They still have Bassett for at least another year. They still have Gausman for another year or two. So you can make the case that Toronto will try to improve their team. And if that's the case, that means every team in this division is going to try to improve. You know the Yankees are. You know the Orioles are. They're going to be competitive for the next 5 to 8 years. Tampa's getting a ton of pitching back. So they should be more competitive, and maybe they'll add a bat or two, and they're going to be better. They should win 85 games next year or more. So now you have us, who hasn't been able to execute anything in a few years. How are we going to outmaneuver those teams through this free agent hot stove winter? I just don't know how we're going to do it. And I think their front offices are way smarter than ours. They have much higher baseball IQ people making their decisions than we have in the Fenway front office.
Well, I agree with that last part tremendously. Even if they had a plan, which I don't think they currently do, I don't trust Breslow or anybody else in support of Breslow to execute the plan. I don't trust that they're willing to move high-end prospects, including one or more of the big four, to make immediate improvements. And if they do, I don't trust that they're not going to butcher the deal or overpay. So, I mean, there's grave concerns there. They haven't done anything but sign O'Neill that's had an effect on the big league club. I mean, look how they handled the how many prospects went out? 8? And you effectively acquired 4 players, none of which are going to compete for the Boston Red Sox in 2025 and make a difference. So, I mean, if you're sitting here listening to this podcast and thinking Breslow has a plan and can execute it, then I have concerns about your ability to assess this club's big league talent and how they're going to improve it. It's not a good situation. They're not going to move on from Breslow. They showed that by having him a part of this thing. It's not happening. He's here. Terry suggested about a month prior to the deadline that they're going to go out and get an executive to support Breslow. Now, I hope he's right, but here's where I have a concern. We called 10 viable candidates for front office that other organizations may also take a look at. And they all said, yeah, I'm not even taking the call. So you get to your 11th guy, Breslow, and you get him because he's not wanted by anybody else. Who that has any self-worth is going to say, but now I'm ready in 2025 to come sit in the secretary's chair of Breslow's office and support him? Who would it possibly be? I mean, my understanding is the first 20 phone calls will go unanswered, and the 21st person, whoever it is, he or she, is not going to be prepared for the job, just like Breslow's not prepared for this job.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they're already tackling that. That was one of the questions in the press conference. They were like, you know, word on the street is you're going to bring a GM. And they were very specific to use that terminology, general manager. Somebody who should be doing what Breslow's job is now, essentially. So they're providing basically Breslow is going to be the top cover to the front office, and they're opening up this new position. Probably going to be somebody young, but they talked about it in the press conference. Like, hey, do you have your eyes on anybody? Da, 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 da. And they're like, hey, we want this to be an organic process of how we find this person. But yes, we are in the search of a general manager. And they kept nailing that term down. I think nailing that term down is trying to really put off the optics of, how the front office is trying to approach things. Again, not trying to defend them, just throwing out what I think that they think works, if that makes any sense.
So part of my complaint here sort of revolves around that. And also a big reason why I think those 10 to 12 executives declined even wanting to interview with the Red Sox was they knew they weren't going to bring their own people in. They weren't going to be allowed to. They had to keep all the holdovers, O'Halloran, Romero, Ferreira, Mike Groupman. I still don't even know who that guy is. Cora
had a big say in that too, didn't he?
Well, they thought he was going to be involved in the search, but once everybody started saying no, I mean, there was no search. They just ended
up
with...
Well, not the search, but like the new guy couldn't come in and can his people.
Well, they...
Like, I thought there was a hitch on the contract coming in. It was basically, you know, you got to be okay with Cora keeping his people as far as organizational is concerned.
Yeah, they made a couple... I mean, Bush was fired right away early on, and then the third base coach, Feebles. So I think a lot of that was resolved. I think Cora will always have the most influence on his coaching staff for the most part. And... But that's why all those people said no, and Breslow was willing to just come in and work with all the holdovers. Typically, in the traditional sense, nowadays, in the last decade or so, the GM is essentially just the assistant GM, the chief baseball officer, president of operations, whatever the title is for the organization.
Who even came up with that name, chief baseball officer? That sounds like such a corporate bullcrap.
Bloom was the first one to have it, so I don't know if it was him, someone else.
Thanks, Bloom.
Yeah. And but anyway, so I don't know that that's really going to be a factor. It'll just be another advisor to Breslow. I was in the quote, Jeremy... you know, mentioned that I gave at some point in the summer was I thought they could bring in a seasoned executive above Breslow, and Breslow might slide into the GM role we were just talking about. But, you know, they would look for a Lucchino type guy or something. But I don't know. And they're not committing to bringing in a GM under Breslow. They mentioned that. They haven't made any decisions on the coaching staff yet. So I don't really have any reason to believe they're going to make any changes. I think Andrew Bailey is safe. I think the
No, after what he was, Breslow, how he was chatting up, you know,
yeah.
how well the pitching is done from a year ago to today, and then was mentioning a lot of the folks that we were like, oh, that was such a disappointment, as positive additions to the rotation in the bullpen. Like, he was tooting his own horn about that pitching. And, I got a lot of faith there that hopefully his enthusiasm and his knowledge of developing that pitching will benefit us somehow, because he seems real excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest pessimist on Bailey, but I would say I'm still a skeptic. We saw the strikeout numbers come down, and then you had those kids come up. Priester got a start in the final game of the year. He only struck out 2. Fitz wasn't punching people out left and right. Strikeouts is a problem, and I hope they look at that this winter and at least make some progress next year with that.
Well, I wish they could just balance that bullpen and starting rotation. When one was hot, the other one was absolutely in the dirt. And if that's the same staff, like, are they just focusing the resources too much one towards the other? Do they need to hire more folks? Do they need to get more intelligent folks in there to balance the load so that everybody's getting the love? Because we saw the bullpen had the capabilities, if it was managed correctly, and the starting rotation could do it well under the right circumstances. So how do we recreate those circumstances with that coaching staff? Does it need to be added more? Do we need to get rid of some? Those are questions that folks were firing out at them today. And they were like, we don't know, dude. We just played yesterday. We're still watching the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy the level of dysfunction all across from a coaching staff, from an executive staff. Now, here's one name to keep an eye on. And it's not for this year. It's for next year. Derek Falvey. He was one of the guys who said no to the Red Sox. He's on the hot seat, and he's with the Twins right now. He's the top executive in that front office. He and Rocco Baldelli are on the hot seat after this collapse this year. Like a month ago, there was no way in my mind the Twins wouldn't make the playoffs, and they, it wasn't a Red Sox 2011 type collapse, but it was a collapse. I just wonder if we miss the playoffs again, and it's way too early to be talking about that, but let's say we don't make it next year. I bet Falvey will be more open to coming in, and he'll have a lot more leverage than he would have had last year. I think that's a guy they will target. And I don't know if that would be a great hire or not. I think he's done okay in Minnesota, especially with pitching. Like, pitching has not been their problem. They did, Joe Ryan did get hurt, but that was a pitching staff that was very good the last couple of years. Sonny Gray was the Cy Young runner-up last year with the Twins. So just a name, and I'd be curious to see what he could do with the resources of a big market if he was at least able to spend up to the luxury tax. But yeah,
if we get to that point, I hope they just sell us off for, I don't know, another golf course or something. Just pass us on,
yeah,
like to somebody else who gives a crap.
If Breslow doesn't get it done this winter, I really think he'll be out next year. I really believe that. But we'll see. Two other things. I guess just one other thing, and if you guys have some final thoughts, we'll get into it. But getting back to the payroll and the season ticket thing, last year they waited until after the season ticket deadline to where people had to commit to keeping them or not keeping their season tickets, which was like the second week of January. They waited until after that deadline, 3 or 4 days after it, to come out and say payroll will be lower in 2024. So I'll be curious to see how it gets handled this year. If
that had no effect. Like, no effect in the sense of, like, well, I say this because they were hyper, hyper aggressive with getting folks on the package now. Like, I got multiple tours this year. I was wined and dined just to get a 10-game package. That's how desperate they were. So that announcement, them locking in their folks, we're only locking in the real old school folks who didn't want to lose like some generational passed on tickets or something like that. Those are the only ones they fleeced.
Well,
and they got enough money. They don't care about that.
I disagree big time.
To get anybody in there.
I disagree big time, because if they come out December 10th and they say that, everybody's canceling their season tickets. Not everybody, but a lot of people. If they're like, oh, you're not going to try to compete this year, you're lowering the bar this year, and you think I'm coming back next year?
Yeah, but there's generational seasonal tickets, or season tickets. There's tickets that, like, if you give those up, these are tickets that folks, that their grandparents have had those season.
Why did they wait till after the deadline? You give those up,
they're gone.
Why did they wait till after the deadline?
You have to hop into a lottery to get it again.
Why did they wait till after the deadline then? Why did they wait till January 10th to suddenly find an ounce of transparency?
I can't answer that. All I can say is how aggressive they were trying to get to get season tickets. They were courting me, and like, all it was like, dude, I might be able to get like a 10-game package like way up in the corner over there. And they were like, yes, please, and treat me like the princess of the ball. Like, that's how desperate they were. So, like, the folks that it would have really affected, no. Those generational tickets, they would have never given them up anyways. They would have hung on to them and then just kept selling them or eating the cost.
Steve, you can't honestly believe that.
I do. I know folks that have had, like, three generations of, like, season, you know, tickets to Fenway, and they
Steve,
won't give
the
up.
Reason why Steve, the reason why they're putting the resources in to court you is because they need people to buy the tickets. They've never needed that before.
That was my point. They're desperate. And then, folks, and it's going to matter before the announcement. They've already locked
it. Steve, the reason why they did it is because if they made the statement before the deadline, they were going to have less people buy and possibly people terminate their previous package. So they waited until the deadline, they got the deposits, then they made the announcement, and an all-time scumbag move. And that's it. It's that simple. And by not disclosing that prior to the deadline, in my opinion, it's misleading by silence. Because in the offseason, before the deadline, their message is full throttle. We're going to spend. We're going to become competitive. Then they get the deposits, and then they say, well, wait a minute. We made a mistake with the full throttle thing, and actually, we're not going to raise payroll at all.
We're going to lower it.
So,
I think they screwed over more everyday fans that were like going and buying tickets at face value. I've gotten bit more
they
by that.
Screwed over everybody, Steve. It's not
of
about
course,
you.
That's
it's
what
not
they
about
do.
Your situation. It's about everybody. It's about corporate sponsors, boxes, people that buy full season, half season, 10 game packages, weekend packages. It's not about you. They're trying to screw over everybody. They don't care about you if you pay.
I never had the
illusion. They don't care about giving you. They don't care about giving. But this is just highlights it, Steve. What you're going in like this? Why? Like, look, I've done a tour of Fenway Park. It's great. I only need to do it once. Okay. You know what? For me, you know, even though this isn't about me, but for me, you know what I care about when I buy when I would consider buying season tickets? Are they going to be competitive? Am I buying tickets in September that I'm going to want to go to that I know I won't be able to resell? I can't even give the tickets away. Who the hell wants to go see them when the Patriots are back and the Bruins are back and the Celtics are back? It doesn't make any sense.
That was my biggest motivator. Honestly, that and the fact that, like, if by some chance they did pull it off, they make it to the postseason, you get dibs. You get a better chance of actually getting tickets into the postseason at Fenway. That was the only things that actually were, you know,
Steve,
alluring.
Love you, mean it, but I can't, bro. So the plan was to hope they get in the playoffs to make it worth it. We've all talked all season long. The first half of tonight's recording was about they did not build a roster to compete. And if you believe they did, you're delusional and you're just drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't want to say certainty, okay? But it was far more likely that your tickets in September were worthless. And that's exactly what happened. And that's not people in a vacuum. It's generalized the fan base. They did not build the roster to have you come to the building in September. They didn't.
Not the past 3 years, anyways.
We want to... I shouldn't say we because I'm not a season ticket holder, but they want to see a Dylan Cease type guy, a George Kirby type guy pitching meaningful games in late August. They don't want to watch Richard Fitz. They don't want to watch Cooper Criswell. And that's the product right now. That's what we're giving them.
For me, and I agree with you, Terry, I don't care who's pitching in the game in September. If it's a meaningful game, I want to go to it. Now, would I prefer to go see Pedro rather than some back of the rotation guy? Of course. Am I going to pay more on that day in the secondary market? Of course I am. It's going to you pay a premium if it's Tarik Skubal's turn in the rotation, who I absolutely love, by the way, versus Dick Fitz making a spot start because Pivetta has forearm tightness. But at the end of the day, build the roster so that if Dick Fitz is getting that start, it's a meaningful start.
Yeah, I mean, you need those guys on the roster
to get you there.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. But yeah, so
can we at least say that for the postmortem that we were 158 games into this season and there was still meaningful baseball being played? Now, it's kind of a shame that it was meaningful baseball being played because things should have been won out then. Things should have already been decided. We shouldn't have slipped this much or we should have just let it go at that point. But it's better than last year.
The team was checked out, though.
Steve, that's moving the goalposts on the expectation for the season.
It was a comparison, not moving goalposts. Make it a comparison.
I'm sorry, but I refuse to consider ourselves contenders when we're five games out with two teams in front of us.
We were checked out, like I was just saying. Like we weren't trying on September 20th, even though we were four or five games out.
I mean, but last year we checked out in August.
Yeah.
So meaningful baseball in September is it's better than nothing in September. It'd be like us having this conversation last year, September 1st, as opposed to October.
There was no.
This is such a loser mentality. This is the way that bad organizations think. And now the organization's requiring us to have conversations like this. Look, I miss the days where either you're a contender or you're not. You either win the World Series or you're with everybody else. And that's how I'm going to continue to look at it, because you're in a major market with a fan base that pulls from six different states. I'm not going to go to the Devil Rays mentality. It's not going to happen. There may be people that are already there, but I will never, as long as this is a major market organization, which it will forever be, I will never accept that loser mentality. I'm never going to do it. And I don't care if they want to have the Devil Rays mentality and hire Chaim Bloom 2.0. I will never succumb to that line of thinking. I don't care what the organization says or does. They need to be doing everything they should to contend. They have all the resources in the world. Six states, they own their own broadcasting rights, all of it. And I can continue on down the list.
Yeah, so
I'm never going to accept that.
Enough said, I guess. Damn, that was
the goalposts have to be at 90 wins. Okay, I'm done. Yes. I'm done with 81 wins with some silver linings. That we're done with that.
Totally. And a couple years ago, 90 wins would have blown out the entire National League, but now that's not even keeping up. So 90 wins isn't even going to guarantee you anything now.
Well, 89 didn't get the Diamondbacks in, but. At least the effort is there. If you're winning 90, you had a shot, and if you fall short, then you know it's painful. But I can tolerate that more than what's been happening in the last 3 years. There's been no reason to watch after the deadline. After the trade deadline, you were done. You didn't buy or sell, and it was over. There was no reason to stay engaged at that point. And this will be my final thought. They touched on the depth falling apart in the second half, and that speaks to the sustainability I talked about. I said my key word all last winter was unsustainable. This is an unsustainable pitching staff, and you're not going to get through the year, and you didn't. You had, I think in the last couple of weeks, you had some nice starts by Crawford and Houck to kind of end the year on a good note, but your ERA was around 6 for most of the second half in the starting rotation. And until Breslow actually makes a good move here, I'm going to question whether or not they have the ability to execute, because we haven't seen it.
Well, to further that point, there's no organizational depth, so the only way to fix it is to spend money. So it comes down to me. My final point will be, are they going to commit the dollars to bridge the gap for the failures in developing the roster through the entire system? Because if we're going to be good in 2025, it's going to take dollar bills. There aren't like pitching prospects that they can draft in June and have ready by the deadline. It's not an option. Dick Fitz ain't the answer. Now, he's a good organizational piece. I've said this multiple times. If he's going into the season, your seventh or eighth option, and he makes starts based on health and those things, that's fine. But if you're counting on guys like that, that's a serious problem. So the only way to fix it is to go get your top of the rotation guy, but also fill out the bottom of the rotation with people that aren't currently in the organization. You got to spend money to do that.
Agreed. Steve, final thoughts?
You know, there was a lot of BS answers from this, press conference, but I also feel that a lot of the beat reporters sitting in there were asking BS questions for stuff that can't be answered right now. And I don't know if that was just to kind of make them look foolish or whatever, because it's like, no, we can't answer this. Ultimately, they've said the same thing that we've been shouting out since spring training, and even louder at the trade deadline, was we need right-hand baddies, we need top of the rotation kind of guys. Breslow did indicate that he's willing to, you know, make some hard trades to kind of balance that out. And I think out of all those clown questions that were coming through on that press conference was, you know, I mean, it almost felt like my kid, like when she does show and tell, because all the kids like stand around in a circle and they ask questions about like, oh, what's the thing that you brought in? And then after the third kid, it's just like the same question over and over. And that's what I felt like 20 minutes of that whole thing was. That's why they trimmed it down and we got the longer version later. But one of the good questions was to Breslow was, you know, are you in a spot now with the development of the farm, the current assets that you have, to pursue as aggressively as you are letting us on to be, to correct things this offseason? And his answer was pretty brilliant in that aspect of like, he was like, yes, this is where I think that the front office is not going to stand in the way of me making those decisions. And he said it confidently enough that like, I feel like he's still kind of hamstrung in the way that Heim Bloom was like, they're going to cut him off at a dollar amount, but he's going to be able to make those moves. And then it was soon after that, that he was like, talking about, you know, Tyler O'Neill, and he was talking about some of the pitching prospects that he had worked with and things like that. So I think they already have a plan, and I think they pretty much spelled it out to us during this press conference, which is they're not going to do much of anything. And they're going to wait and see what free agents walk away from the lowball deals that we give them, and then we'll try to scramble and fill in the holes after that and hope that our core will be enough to excite people to fill seats. And that was the only thing that I got out of this press conference. So dumb reporters, I mean, dumb questions to the, you know, the front office there, and then weak answers back from them. And Kennedy, why is he even there? I mean, just put a stick figure of him up here at this point.
A lie. That's why. That's my point.
I'll give you that, because I did say that earlier. He was there to take flack. Like, pretty much everything that came out of his mouth was like, my bad. Like, I messed up. I screwed this up. I made a bad decision, and we'll try harder. Like, he was there to, like, be the ballistic vest for, you know, Breslow, so that maybe Breslow can get another ballistic vest somewhere in between. And like, that's another corporate strategy. They're putting all these layers of folks in here making decisions, and that doesn't sit right with me, like, when it's – We're trying to build a competitive team, and all we're doing is putting a bunch of middle managers in here and paying them millions of dollars as opposed to paying a right-handed bat or a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get through the month here with the playoffs. I would expect there might be some minor coaching moves. Interestingly, Mike Napoli was fired from the Chicago Cubs this weekend. First base coach. I wonder if there was just him and council weren't meshing or something. I don't know, but
there heard the Giants freed up some executive and managerial folks recently.
Oh yeah, yeah, they got rid of Farhidi, who's been very well respected, came from the Dodgers organization, and replaced him with a former player, Buster Posey. So we'll see. I would take Posey over Breslow. If I'm being completely honest, but we'll see how that works out for them. But we'll be back to cover anything Red Sox related as it develops. But I would expect the playoffs will be the focal point of coverage here until the conclusion of the World Series. And we'll be back. We're going to do a Thursday night recording to recap this wild card series and give our picks for the divisional series round. So stay tuned for that. Everyone else, take care.